Amy, on this podcast, we try to always offer useful takeaways. And if you learn nothing else from us, learn this useful parenting lesson by Pampers Cruisers 360.
Pampers Cruisers 360 are the ultimate parent hack, the best diaper to use as soon as your baby starts standing or walking. Instead of ordinary diaper tabs, they have a unique 360-degree stretchy waistband that moves with your wild child.
Pampers Cruisers 360 makes it so easy to change your baby. Who probably doesn't stop moving just because they need a diaper changed? Just slide on to apply and away they go.
And fear not, parents. Pampers Cruisers 360 offers an up to 100% leak-free fit. And they just got even better with a new blowout barrier. Need we say more?
For trusted protection, trust Pampers, the number one pediatrician recommended brand. Download the Pampers Club app today and earn Pampers cash. Then redeem your Pampers cash for exclusive Pampers coupons, savings, and rewards.
Only redeemable via Pampers Club. Pampers cash has no cash value.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Fresh Take from What Fresh Hell, Laughing in the Face of Motherhood. This is Margaret.
And this is Amy. And today we are delighted to welcome back to the podcast, Catherine May. She is the author of the runaway bestseller, Wintering, The Power of Rest and Retreat in Difficult Times, which has been translated into 25 languages. Her new book is Enchantment, Awakening Wonder in an Anxious Age. Catherine lives by the sea in Whitstable, England. Welcome back, Catherine.
Thank you for having me. I was just telling Margaret, I think I'm a friend of the show officially now.
Oh, that's
absolutely returning champ, as we say, our returning champion, Catherine May. No pressure.
This is one of these books, Catherine, that you read and you just nod along on every page. You start the book exactly where I'm starting this interview, in a place what you call post-COVID numbness. Take us through what that is and how that manifested for you.
Yeah, it was a funny time, actually, because on one hand, I was like really ready to go back out into the world. And I felt like my brain couldn't work properly without seeing other people. But at the same time, I had this strong feeling that I didn't want to return to life as it was, and that pace of the real world felt unbearable. And I think I was really stuck somewhere in between. Time just didn't work for me anymore. I didn't have that same desire to go out, and all my rhythms were out. You know, I was just out of the habit of leaving the house.
And we had such a hard time getting used to it. And then this is what happens when we try to get back, right? That there's a pandemic hangover, which wasn't just when you couldn't leave the house. I mean, you said you couldn't read a book. This is exactly what I identified with. I want to read a book. The book is sitting there. It's a good book. I'd love to read it, but I can't read a page without reaching for my phone or staring dully into space. Why do you think that happened for so many of us?
Yeah, I mean, I just felt like my attention glanced off everything I tried to focus on. And it seems to me that's a sort of artifact of fear, that we're afraid of this stuff that's kind of coming for us. And, you know, some of us it touched more closely than others. But there's this constant sense that if I haven't got my eyes on the news, or if I haven't got my eyes on, you know, where my family are at the moment, then I'm not safe. And I don't know that they're safe. And, you know, if you think about it in that context, it's not that surprising that we found it so hard to do something more gentle, like reading a book or watching a movie. We're in this constant state of urgency and almost physically looking over our shoulder all the time.
Yeah. And as a sort of combination to some degree of urgent boredom. It's a very pervasive anxiety, but a very kind of diffuse anxiety too. It's not the anxiety of tomorrow is the biggest exam I'll take in my life, which at least has an action feeling. This is kind of a kind of overwhelming yet very passive anxiety. There's no real action to take in response to it. And for me, that staring into space, I don't want to do anything feeling, very much came from the nature of the anxiety, which was sort of everywhere, but very hard to grab onto at the same time.
Everything everywhere all at once.
Yes, exactly.
It's kind of diffuse, isn't it? And I think for loads of us, it's rolled on into this period now. You know, we haven't let go of that sense of threat because we've learned it on a cellular level now. And, you know, I don't think it honestly just came from the pandemic. I think we were already living elevated levels of fear. And this sense the world is changing so much and is so unknown to us now and is frightening. It's really significant, isn't it, that just as we were coming out of a pandemic and beginning to emerge from that, the war in Ukraine kicked off. And it's almost like, I mean, God knows what that's like for Ukrainians, but even for those of us who are very far away from it and very protected from its effect, there's this sense of a collapse of the world just grinding on and it not getting better, it becoming more and more menacing. And then of course now we're beginning to look at pandemics of other things. I mean, we could do without avian flu, frankly.
Yes, thank you.
No, thank you, avian flu.
I said to my mental health professional, like, I definitely had that feeling of in the movie, like the shipwrecked person gets to the shore and I looked up and it was like, war. Again, very removed and protected from it, but it felt like when the pandemic's over, everything will be okay. And then it just felt like, nope, we're rolling into another very uncertain time.
I do look back on the puzzles and the movie nights, and we were sort of putting on a brave face to make our families feel safe. I mean, I was very frightened. We had serious COVID illness in our house. It was terrible. But the puzzles were nice, right? In a way, maybe because like it was real and it was active and it was happening, easier to find the silver lining. This is something different what you're saying afterwards, right? Like I haven't done a puzzle in a year now and I kind of liked doing puzzles, but I can't do puzzles. I can't make myself do it. Like we've survived it and now comes this weird static in our brains all the time. So like, why does that happen after the hard
because part? Things that we did to make it better were actually quite exhausting in themselves. You know, they didn't come naturally, really, did they? They were a big act of organization to often try and make stuff okay for like isolated older parents, you know, doing kind of Zoom dinners or to make kids feel safer. But I think decomposed over time and the will to do that organization just felt more and more effortful. I mean, I tried to set up an online movie club with some friends, and I think we watched two movies, and after the third one, we were just like, no, let's just not do this again. Let's just all separately.
We did one. We did exactly one, my whole family. And then people were kind of trying to talk, and it was like, wait, what'd you say? We got to pause the movie. It was a mess.
It was a mess. It's really interesting, I think, to reflect on that now. I mean, obviously the pandemic isn't over, but that acute phase is. And it seems to have done something permanent to us. And I think for some people, that's trauma. But I think for other people, it's about changed habits and really fundamentally changed ways of living. And at the same time, this kind of consciousness that we don't want to go back to exactly the same as before. And therefore what? Like what now? What do we do if we don't have a pattern to follow? And that's part of that drifting, lost feeling that we're all quite haunted by it.
And I think even in a practical way, I live in a commuter town outside of Manhattan, and it used to be 7:30 in the morning, the cars filled up the lot, everybody went to the city, they came back, and then on the weekends, we would ride our bikes at the parking lot because nobody was there. And we now ride our bikes there Wednesdays. It's empty. People have really changed the way they live their lives. And people are also making tremendous adjustments still, having a spouse at home. And is that good or bad? And working from home. And is that a positive or negative? I think the reckoning of how much things have changed, we're not dialed in on as much because we're like, okay, that happened. And now we're all moving on. But when I look around, things are very different than they were.
It's been a source of big conflict as well, I think, that you know, people not wanting to go back to the workplace. I know a lot of people have ended up in conflict with their managers over that. And I don't know about you, but my house now, I don't have a very big house. I mean, my household's very full. I've always worked from home, so it's been my domain in the daytime, and I love that. But now my husband's home too, which means we've lost another bedroom. And so everything feels very packed in. You know, that's stressful. But it's actually distracting too. And I think we're all getting less personal space. And I, from all the people I know, I think a lot of us are still dogged with ill health after the pandemic too. You know, we might have had COVID or we've had one of these or other, you know, massive diseases that seem to be passing through us. All our immune systems don't seem to be what they used to be. And like literally everyone I know this winter has had thing after thing after thing after thing back to back. And I'm hearing from so many people, like I haven't felt well since September. And that's normally delivered with a hacking cough. And yeah, there's stuff going on that I don't think we're really talking about in the mainstream. And we haven't acknowledged the burden of grief that is floating among us that was never fully expressed during the lockdown phase, and which now is, the time has passed for it, but of course it's still absolutely present in the people that have lost someone in the most traumatic circumstances.
We're talking to Catherine May. She is the author of the new book, Enchantment. There is another way to live. At least Catherine thinks so. And we're going to talk more about that when we get back. Margaret, exciting news. I am about to have a new baby nephew. And believe it or not, this will be my 13th nephew.
Amy, you're ready to give up your amateur status. You're a pro aunt at this point.
Our family has seen a lot of babies. And as soon as they start standing or walking, I send them all a whole lot of Pampers Cruisers 360.
Pampers Cruisers 360 don't have ordinary diaper tabs. Instead, they have a unique 360-degree stretchy waistband that moves with your newly mobile little one.
Pampers Cruisers 360 offer a gap-free fit that is up to 100% leak-proof, crucial once your baby is quite literally up and at 'em. And that gap-free fit helps prevent your baby from taking off their diaper, a habit you do not want them to get into.
You can say that again. And Pampers Cruisers 360 just got even better with a new blowout barrier. Need we even elaborate on the need for that, friends? For trusted protection, trust Pampers, the number one pediatrician recommended brand.
Download the Pampers Club app today and earn Pampers Cash. Then redeem your Pampers Cash for exclusive Pampers coupon savings and rewards.
Only redeemable via Pampers Club. Pampers Cash has no cash value. Hello, Hellions. You know we listen to a lot of podcasts that aren't our own, and today we want to tell you about a podcast that really speaks to us and will speak to any parent of a child with special education needs.
The podcast is called Understood Explains. This season of the show is hosted by teacher and special education expert Juliana Ortube, and it's all about how to navigate individual education plans, also known as IEPs.
The latest season of Understood Explains covers topics like how to tell if your child needs an IEP, and it busts common myths about special education. One of my kids has an IEP, and I found this podcast so validating and so helpful. I feel better equipped to advocate for my child's educational needs now.
This podcast is helpful for parents in many different situations, whether your child already has an IEP or you're just starting to wonder if they might need extra support in the classroom. Juliana has content for kids of all ages and for kids who are learning English as an additional language as well.
To listen to Understood Explains, search for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains.
More and more, you hear about the importance of electrolytes as part of staying hydrated because you need the sodium and the potassium, not just the water. And whether you're looking to hydrate during a workout, while traveling, or at the end of a long night, Sports Research Hydrate Electrolytes have got you covered with over 65 trace minerals, 7 essential vitamins, and coconut water powder.
Crisp and refreshing and without any sugar, this is hydration powered by Sports Research. They're little packets you can just grab and take with you to mix into your water bottle on the go. My favorite flavor so far, Amy, gotta be the cherry pomegranate.
Interesting. My high schooler likes the lemon lime, and she keeps a few handy in her backpack for days that she has practice after school. These electrolytes have the sodium and the potassium that you need to go with it in the optimal ratio for daily hydration.
Visit sportsresearch.com and use code WHATFRESH at checkout for 50% off your purchase of Hydrate.
That's Sports Research, SPORTSRESEARCH, sportsresearch.com, and use code WHATFRESH for 50% off your Hydrate electrolytes order. So, Catherine, we know we're soaking in it, as we like to say in the States. We are bathing in this feeling. And you lay it out so clearly in the book, but you started to get curious about what's the way out of this. Is there another way to live, to cut through the brain fog? And how did you even sort of develop that question for yourself and then start to move through it?
I think I got to a point where I absolutely had to. I'd reached such a stopping point that I knew I needed to do something. I also knew that my resolve wasn't very good about it. And at some point along the line, I put a post-it note above my desk that said, go for a walk. Because I'd realized, I'd had this insight that I was struggling to get out from under my desk. Like even when I didn't actually have something to do, it made me feel like I was being productive to be sitting at my desk and staring at my laptop screen and like maybe looking at Pinterest endlessly, which I do occasionally still engage in. But I realized that I had to change my habit, really. And I needed that initial impetus. And so one day when I was just choked with anxiety, I saw the post-it note and I was like, right, come on, you left a message to your future self. Let's go. You know, sometimes you've got to listen to your own advice, haven't you? And I'd gone to the effort of writing it down. So yeah, so I walked up to the top of my town, where a new village green has been established. Our town is growing. And so they've made this new space. I was curious to see that they had installed this stone circle. You know, Britain is full of beautiful ancient stone circles, but this is our newest one. And I wanted to go and visit it, go and see what it was like. And I'd been there before. So yeah, I was just curious. I went up there not expecting much, but actually changing that space, changing that habit had a huge effect on me. And I ended up taking off my shoes to walk barefoot because I needed to sense my environment a bit more. And it set me thinking about how we worship these days, you know, like how we don't really know what to do anymore. We don't have a place to go that we feel part of in the way that perhaps our ancestors would have done. But instead, we're reaching for something. We're reaching for a new practice. We're reaching for a new way of understanding life. And I think that set a lot of this book in train, really, just having that experience of getting outside and knowing the effect it had on my body, but thinking about that bigger question of like, how do we make space for our minds to roam in now, and space that feels joyful and comforting and stimulating and opens up reflection.
In talking about the nature of the pandemic, what I loved about wintering was that it's okay to find this cozy space. I think for me during quarantine, I really enjoyed the locked down of it for myself in terms of I am free from expectations. I am in my little circle of trust with my five people who I feel safe with. And then I think in a negative way came down into literally like I'm physically rounding my shoulders over my phone, over my Twitter, over my doom scrolling. But that felt safe to me. That kind of hunched over, closed in posture of quarantine was really pleasing to me in a way, but not really good for me in a way. And this idea of like opening back up and finding something that is outside, that is not scary, that is wondrous. But I think that that process has been really challenging for me. I liked that tucked in altogether feeling.
It sounds like you were doing lots of monitoring as well. It sounds like you were watching lots of different people and lots of bits of news around the world, which I think has been almost a substitute for feeling safe for us.
Or somehow it's like a self-stimulation of safety. Like if I'm the person keeping track of everything, I will not be hurt by anything because I will know where the tanks are going and how the pandemic is going and if the avian flu is going to be, that I've put myself in charge of huddling over the news and being the keeper of that for everyone.
Yeah, the watcher or the keeper of that world is such a truth. I think a lot of us have come to believe that if our eyeballs are on whatever situation is making the world feel afraid, that it will be okay as long as we're watching it. But of course, you know, our modern news media just gives us 24 hours a day of so much to watch. I don't think we were set up to process this amount of news. I mean, even in previous war times, and certainly previous pandemics, we would have only got the news once a day from a newspaper or, you know, even until recently, TV news was on at breakfast time and mid-afternoon, and that was it. That was the end of it. That was all the news that you could possibly find. And in between, you were free to not know about the news. And now we can just watch. And we can also watch on social media as people are telling us their personal news. You know, like I watched so many unfolding tragedies, but you said about that shape of your body as you did it. And that's so significant. You know, we were all rolled up into these little balls around our phone and our shoulders were hunched over. And when you're doing that, you can barely breathe and everything was constrained. You know, Enchantment is such a book about re-inhabiting my body after a long time of being a whole lifetime of living in my head, actually, like not just the pandemic, just existing in my head.
Because the physicality of opening your body, your belly, your chest is vulnerable. That's literally like a dog rolling on its belly to get scratches is saying, I trust you because I can open my body. Moving and talk the way you talk about kind of moving back into the world, it involves that vulnerability, and it was helpful for me to recognize.
Enchantment is small wonder, magnified through meaning, fascination caught in the web of fable and memory. And this makes me think of playing in the backyard as a small child and saying, you know, this is my treehouse and this is my den. And Margaret Starter was very sure the fairies were part of her life, right, for several years. You know, just that sort of anything can happen, impossibility. And it sounds very unachievable, right? It sounds to me, coming to this, very like, oh, yeah, I did that when I was seven. But that's for somebody who's seven. That's not for somebody who's 47 and has, you know, important grown-up things to worry about all the time.
And tired.
Right. But is that what you're saying? Like, we need to get back to that in a directly childlike sense, or is there something else?
I think we knew how to do it as children. And what we often miss out on is letting it grow with us, because actually returning to that same childlike experience of wonder isn't enough for us as adults. And actually, what we need to do when we're, yeah, in our 40s for sure, is make more complex meanings that take in all of the dark stuff that we've just talked about, actually, that acknowledge it as part of life and weave it into our understanding. And that's sometimes comprised of like very simple experiences, you know, like holding a stone and just enjoying the beauty of that, the beauty of the stone to your eyes, but also how beautiful it feels in your hand. Like, it can still be very pure and simple, but it also can be full of other stories. And that's what kind of interlinks us to mythology and to, you know, our knowledge of the landscape and our knowledge of our local area and the other people that we know. And it's about finding a way to play as an adult in the way that we could play as children, but transposed up to adulthood. We definitely need that much more nuanced understanding of the world than we once would have done.
The idea that you talk about, that wonder and enchantment does not have to be sparked by grand things, that sometimes wonder feels like it only lives at the edge of the Grand Canyon if we can get our budget together and save up and go there. I'm directing a play right now, and I was at the rehearsal the other night, very dingy, dark room, and I was thinking of the book while we were just sitting there doing this run through, just the power of 16 people trying to tell a story together in a room. I was like, this is it. This is enchantment. This is wonder. It's not only that I have to go to the top of the Empire State Building and take in the wondrous view of the five boroughs. Amy says this all the time, right? It's like gathering information. You find what you're looking for. Having just read the book and sitting in this very dingy room with these, you know, not well-dressed actors, and just the wonder. I was like, here it is. When you're looking for wonder, it helps you to find it.
Yeah, I think that really nails it for me. And there's that sense that we can kind of, that enchantment is like a holiday that we have to buy our way to, you know, and it's expensive and it's once in a lifetime. I don't know about you, but I've had so many underwhelming experiences at places that are supposed to be extraordinary. You know, I can tell you visually, they're going to look nice in the photos, but they've left me emotionally cold, actually. I think that's because we put so much weight on stuff that's really distant rather than going looking for that sense that we need every day. And it's funny to me because, like, one of the contrasts, I think, between how I experience this as a child and how I experience that as an adult is that as a child, I hated those kind of thoughts that made me feel small. You know, like when someone first explained to me that the universe is probably infinite, and I couldn't sleep for days after hearing that. It horrified me. Like, I can't make any sense of that. I can't unravel it. Like, what do I mean in that context? And now, as an adult, I'm really comforted by that. You know, like, my sense of self-importance as a child was really elevated. And now, as an adult, I'm yearning for those kind of conceptions that humble me and that make me feel like the weight is lifted off my shoulders and that I no longer have to see myself as holding the weight of the world. And that's a real shift that I've made. I'm looking for ways to feel small and to notice how amazing everything is around me.
Enchantment is, in a sense, it's something that requires not just to be struck by the beauty of the Northern Lights, but something that we can cultivate by deliberate attention. When we come back, I want to ask Catherine more about how we can transform our ability to be enchanted.
Oh, hey, everybody. It's us, Blair and Molly, your old pals from Toddler Purgatory. Two moms who are also actors, who are also creative beings, who sometimes feel stuck. And now we're back with a whole new podcast about unsticking it, launching in January. What happens when life gets in the way of our creativity instead of nourishing it? We talk to all sorts of guests about how to break through the mucky, gluey, sticky wall that can get between you and your creativity. We hear about their journeys, their successes, their challenges, and even their bougie coffee shop orders. So, join us, won't you, as we deep dive into how to unstick ourselves from the life gunk that can get in the way of our creative freedom. Get out of there, life gunk. Let us help you get back to your best creative self. Look for Unsticking It with Blair and Molly, wherever you listen to podcasts, starting in January. Unsticking It with Blair and Molly, because sometimes life sucks. Unsticking it.
Feel like you're the martyr in your family? You're not alone. Hey, this is Joanne.
And Brie.
And we're from the No Guilt Mom podcast. Brie, we talk to a lot of moms.
Yeah, we sure do.
And if you're a mom who has a to-do list that is so massive that you get overwhelmed and you shut down.
Or if you fall into the habit of doing everything for everyone and don't know how to change it, we can help you become a no-guilt mom.
We're going to take you from family martyr to family model. That's role model, so that you role model the behavior that you want to see out of your kids.
You're going to go from being tired and overwhelmed to energized and guilt-free.
Every week, you'll get actionable strategies that you can implement right away from the experts that we interview and from us.
We also have a whole lot of fun, so check out the No Guilt Mom podcast everywhere you listen to your favorite shows.
So, Catherine, I've been thinking about this book, too. I live in New York City. The book definitely talks a lot about the importance of being outside and nature and connecting with the names of birds and plants and things. And that's something that has felt to me sort of an unreachable in New York City. But right now, there's an owl loose in Central Park right now.
Yes, the famous owl.
His name is Flacco. He escaped from the zoo about 6 weeks ago. But he stayed in Central Park. And for a while, they were trying to recapture him and nothing they were doing was working. Meanwhile, he was, you know, pooping and like giving other signs of, I know what I'm doing out here.
I'm all set, guys. I'm Flacco. I'm good. I'm going to live in Central Park.
So eventually they're like, all right, I guess Flacco is going to just live in the park now. We're not going to try to recapture him. He seems to be fine. And it's given me, because I try to make myself go for a walk even when I don't want to, but it's given me something to do. Like, I'm looking for Flacco when I go on these walks, and I haven't found him yet, but one of these days I'm going to see him in a tree. That sort of point of focus has helped me exponentially increase my excitement and enchantment about being in the park, because I could see Flacco. Is that how we sort of increase this? Do we set our mind to, I'm going to notice something deliberately today, or do you keep yourself completely open? How does it work for you?
It's such a good example, actually, because one of the things I always say is that to find enchantment, you follow the lines of your curiosity. And Flacco is like a mass curiosity event, isn't he? Like, everyone just wants to have eyes on him. He sounds amazing. I would totally be there looking for him if it was up to me. And it's that sense of like, what are you drawn to and what excites you? And then I love the way that people have made meaning around this owl. Like, people are using him to talk about freedom and escape and what they would do if they had their day in the sun, you know. And there's been this sort of attitude projected onto him that he's sort of, you know, he's quite sassy, isn't
right?
He? Quite a sassy owl, as owls go. But that's exactly what I mean. And, you know, I visited New York City in the summer and I found so many things to be completely fascinated by. I always loved those great big outcrops of rock in the middle of Central Park. Like, they've got no place being there, but there they are. And suddenly, right in the middle of the city, you feel like you're in this raw space where the earth is rising up, you know, beneath your feet. And I find that completely extraordinary.
It's funny you say that, because my little brother, this is 20 years ago, gosh, more than, he came to visit me. And we're going to go to the top of the Empire State Building. We're going to do this. I had 18 things for him to do. I was not a parent yet, but he's a much younger sibling. Anyway, we got to Central Park, and those big rocks in Central Park He was good. Like 6 hours climbing on those rocks while I'm like tapping my foot and looking at my watch. We have an appointment here. We're going here.
You don't have time for wonder.
Right. Right. Sort of was like, oh, this is it. He's happy. Like, I brought him to New York for him to experience things that made him happy and excited. This rock, which I've never thought about before. We're going to be here all day while he climbs on this rock, but who cares? And that was a huge, you know, thunderbolt for me. But just interesting you mention it because I was blind to how interesting they were. But an 8-year-old child was like, whoa, and just thought they were amazing.
Yeah, I find them mind blowing. And I, you know, it's these things that sometimes we need fresh eyes to help us to see them. I would want to know, you know, what kind of rocks they are, when they formed, what that means, like what the process by which those rocks got there and how and what did that landscape look like before it was so built up. I mean, someone told me recently the sort of main avenue running up Manhattan is actually really ancient and was used long before the, you know, the British and Dutch came. Yeah, it's all of those things, you know, they take us into our recent and deep past. They make links between people across millennia. They link us deeply to nature and they show us this earth that is rolling underneath our feet outside of our control and outside of all the building we do around it. And yeah, that to me, that gets right to the heart of enchantment.
Another way I was thinking about this book is, well, we live in the suburbs, but there's some forest around us. I mean, woods, really, trees. But there's deer who come.
And that's what you've downgraded your trees.
Well, I was like, we live in the forest. Let's be honest. There's a train that runs right there. There's some trees. But there is a family of deer and our kids have named all the deer. So there's Fenlin the deer and he's kind of the bully deer. We watch them and we know these deer and we have stories about them. And then recently we got a little chip for our cat that goes on our collar. It's not an implant. It just sits on our collar and we can watch where she goes at night. She wanders. And then sometimes we go walk her route. She goes a mile every night. She walks all over. I think that sometimes animals can do this for us and our children. What is our cat's life like? What is Fenlin's life like, the deer who comes by? What kind of schedule are they operating on? And it connects you to a world that is at once immediate, but bigger somehow than the world of punching over your phone.
But I think to give a different example as well, I mean, the other thing that I find in New York City that I always go to see when I'm there is Monet's Water Lilies. The first time I went to see that, my dad lived in New York for a while and I'd gone to visit him in the summer and he'd said, take the train in from Long Island, you know, take the train in and like go and see some museums or something. And I'd seen 100 photos of that painting and I'd never thought it was very interesting at all. I always thought it was a rather polite piece of work that was nothing to do with me. Like I wanted to see more radical stuff than that. I remember walking into that room the first time and I mean, it's enormous, but also noticing how spacious the brushwork is and how the color speaks to each other and clashes against itself and creates something entirely different to its component part. And having this moment of like, I get it. Like I felt this direct line of communication with the artist, but also with all the other people who loved it. And it was a real kind of peak moment for me of just encountering this, the force of this piece of art. And I took my son back to see it this time and he was not interested in the leaf, but I was sure that it had to have a massive impression on him because it had such a massive impression on me, but it made no dent in him because he hadn't seen like other examples of it. He had no expectation of it. And so he was just like, yeah, it's a little painting. Oh, that's fine, you know, and he was off out to look at something more interesting.
That's an interesting data point, I think, as a parent, as we talk about the Disneys or the like built city of wonder that you're going to go to. Wonder is very individual, right? What makes other people light up in that synapse level? It's not the same for everyone. And you can share your wonder with other people, but different things spark it for different people, which is really interesting.
Yeah, it's definitely subjective. And actually, that's no bad thing because it is this very personal, intimate relationship that you foster over a long period of time. One of our problems, I think, is that we're waiting for people to hand it to us. And so much about our culture tells us, like, these are the things you're supposed to feel excited by. And the other things are a bit silly. And I think that's actually one of the things that really undermines our ability to feel, authentically feel it, and not just to kind of enact it, because this is the moment when we're supposed to feel great about everything. And yeah, you can't be didactic about enchantment. It is something, it's a relationship you have to create for yourself and have to nurture over the course of your life.
We've been talking to Catherine May. Her brand new book is Enchantment, Awakening Wonder in an Anxious Age. Catherine, tell us where our listeners can find you and your book.
You can find my book in all good bookstores, and you can find me, probably the best place these days, I think, is at my Substack, which is catherinemay.substack.com. So I write, I write three newsletters a fortnight, which I realize is an odd rhythm to write a newsletter in, but that's the one that works for me.
All of our listeners are Googling, how long is a fortnight right now?
You don't say fortnight. What?
We do not say fortnight.
It's 2 weeks. Yeah.
2 weeks. Okay, guys. 2 weeks is a fortnight. Don't tell us we didn't ever teach you anything.
Honestly, how is it that we're supposed to speak a common language? There's so few words we have in common.
I know. Not even close. Then next you're going to tell us how many stones something is, and then we're really going to be in trouble.
Can I tell everyone about my podcast as well? Because if they love yours, they might like mine. I've got a podcast called How We Live Now, where we talk about the kind of key questions that are coming up for all of us. And I invite lots of different guests to share their view on it. I really enjoy doing that. One of my favorite things right now.
Fantastic. We will link to all of those places in our show notes to make it very easy to find. Catherine, thank you for coming back. Official friend of the podcast, Catherine May. It was so great talking to you again.
Yay! Well, I'm delighted to be invited back, and I hope to come back another time when I've managed to write another book. You never know.
Absolutely. You're first on our list.
Hey there. I'm Debbie Reber, the founder of Tilt Parenting and the author of the book Differently Wired. The mission of Tilt is to change the way neurodivergence, whether that's having a learning disability, having ADHD, being gifted, autistic, or some combination of all of the above, is perceived and experienced so differently wired kids and the parents like us raising them can truly thrive. On the Tilt Parenting podcast, I get to talk with authors, therapists, educators, and parenting experts who are committed to this mission. I ask the questions my listeners are most curious about when it comes to supporting our kids. And in turn, my guests share strategies for challenges, out-of-the-box ideas for navigating school, best practices for therapies, tips for advocating, and so many thoughtful insights on what it really takes to help our kids grow up feeling seen and respected so they can create awesome lives for themselves. I know that raising a differently wired kid can feel overwhelming and isolating, but I promise you, you are not alone, and it can feel so much better. If you're on this parenting journey, come listen to Tilt Parenting. Together, we can shift this paradigm and show up for our exceptional kids with hope, possibility, and joy.
Are you overwhelmed by the things that get in the way of you doing what you want to do? Are you looking for ways to simplify life to better align with your values? Do you want to create space in your schedule so you have room for more of the good stuff? Play, joy, relationships, gratitude, and more? If you answered yes to any of these questions, I invite you to check out Edit Your Life, a podcast to help you edit the unnecessary from your life so you have more room to enjoy the awesome. Through episodes with me, Christine Coe, and a range of super smart, compassionate, and thoughtful guests, you'll come away with big picture insights and practical ways to declutter your home, schedule, and mental space without getting bogged down by perfection. I have always believed that small moments and actions matter tremendously. My goal is to help you find agency and space in your life through doable baby steps that will leave you feeling accomplished instead of overwhelmed. Check out Edit Your Life wherever you enjoy your podcasts.